Everybody likes guns. They just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the host and their guests.
Hello and welcome to episode 105 of New Shooter Canada. This week we have two guests joining us from the University of Calgary Firearms Association. We have Delana and Rachel. So why don't we start off with introducing our guests and what they did in guns. Delano, how about you introduce yourself to the listeners and what you did in guns?
Hi, everybody. My name is Delano Soteris. I'm the current president and one of the three founders of the University of Calgary Firearms Association. I've been doing this for about 3 years now, and it's been great. My week in guns, let's see. I went hunting a couple times. I've really gotten big into the birds this year, been doing a lot of duck hunting. Limited out about a couple weeks back, and now I've been getting straggler birds here and there, but nothing too crazy. I've been able to take out, I think, 6 new first-time hunters this year as well, so that's been something that's been pretty interesting, definitely getting them hooked on the sport. Other than that, just been participating in a bunch of club events, obviously the University of Calgary Farms Association's events. We had an indoor target shoot last week, which I participated in, and we also held our second annual trap shooting tournament just on Saturday. The weather was miserable, but it was a really great time. And, yeah, that's been my week in guns.
What kind of hunting are people interested in?
Well, I've been a big game hunter for pretty much all my life, and I've just actually gotten into this waterfowl hunting now. And I found that waterfowl hunting is like significantly easier to get people involved in, just because there's so many organizations, conservation organizations like Delta Waterfowl, Ducks Unlimited, Alberta Conservation Association, that own plots of land that allow the public use land. So that's one less thing to worry about, is actually land to hunt on. And then on top of that as well, if you were to take somebody out big game hunting, you know, you need to have adequate freezer space and even a garage to store this big game. While, you know, ducks, you just bring them home, butcher them the same day and, you know, a couple hours for all your birds and stick them in the freezer and you're good. So I found that dogs barking in the background there. I found that waterfowl hunting is just, it's a better experience. There's a lot more shooting. It keeps people awake, keeps people interested, and it's a lot of fun. So,
awesome. Well,
next, we have Rachel. Rachel, how about you introduce yourself and tell the listeners what you did in guns?
All right. So, hello, everyone. I'm Rachel. I'm the Vice President of Operations for the University of Calgary Firearms Association. So the last week, I've mostly just been doing stuff at the club. So last Thursday, we had a indoor shoot at the Calgary Shooting Center. Got a bunch of new people out. I think they were almost all new shooters. So that was great to get a bunch of new people out learning how to shoot. And then again, I also participated in our second annual trap shoot competition on Saturday this last weekend as well. As Delano said, it was a little bit miserable, but I was quite impressed. We actually still had full turnout, even with the miserable weather. So that was a big plus. And it was pretty competitive, actually. We got some good scores up on the board, so that was really nice to see. That's pretty much been my week, actually.
Now, at the Calgary Shooting Center, you can actually shoot centerfire rifles indoors as well, can you not?
Yes.
Excellent.
So we have a few centerfires as well as some rimfires.
Now, does the association own any of their own firearms, or you guys just rent the equipment from the shooting center?
So we do have club use firearms. They're owned by our exec team for the most part, because the club itself can't own them. But we do have contracts that they're basically club firearms. They're just registered under our executives. So we do have quite a few that we are bringing out to our events regularly, pretty much every event.
Excellent.
All right, I'll go next since mine is short and sweet. Originally, I had glasses in the show notes, but Mike decided that we had to make it shooting related, so he put shooting. So apparently, I bought shooting glasses.
I'm just trying to help you out here.
And I invited myself out on a hunting trip with Mr. Uzi next year.
Awesome.
Whether we, I'm not sure, but.
What are you going out there to hunt?
I don't know. He made a comment about how he was hunting and still watching the Blue Jays game. And then Buddy Thomas or something, and I jumped on the bed. Oh, that's the other thing I did. I twisted my ankle last night. I officially jumped on the Blue Jays bandwagon. My ankle raised it up, but it's all okay now, so I'll be ready for the next series.
All right.
You realize that we do have an open invitation to go hunting with Wendell out in Texas, eh? He invited us all down to Texas to go wild boar hunting, yeah.
With Tim?
From the International Liberty or Death podcast, he invited us all to tiered shoot down to Texas wild boar hunting. I'd like to take him up on that. A couple things. I messaged Ken from Modern Rifleman Radio. A couple of our listeners asked us why the boys hadn't been putting out any new shows recently. They've just been really, really busy. They're planning on doing a few shows this month, but the fall episodes will be a little sparse this year because, you know, Brendan's competition's starting up. So message the boys, light a fire under them, and they'd love to hear from you. I did actually go shooting this week. Even though I was sick as a dog, my club fees were still due, so I made the drive up to my range. And I made it for club night, so I got to shoot my X-Trim. I love my X-Trim. And there's a couple new shooters there, so I taught them how to use open sights. I added 3/4 pound to the buttstock of my Uzcon 41. Remember I said I wanted to see if I could put that recoil reducer in it? Well, it wouldn't fit. It was too big. And I tried putting some 45s in there, but they kept rattling around. So I took a piece of pipe insulation, I cut a long strip, and I put it down the channel. Then I forced 15 rounds of 230 grain, it was 45 down it, shoved it all in there, took some caulking, sealed it up, works perfect. So now I got an extra 3/4 pound on the buttstock of my gun. It's nice, it balances out nicely now, because now I can just carry it right over the action. It doesn't go muzzle forward like it was before. And what else did I do to it? I had some high density foam, so I cut it out to the dimensions of my butt pad, and I put it between my butt pad and the frame, so hopefully it'll also help with the recoil a little bit, because it's so light, it really kicks bad. And I loaded up the rest of those crappy aim point or aim projectiles that I had, and I'm going to shoot those off tomorrow, because I don't have to go back to work till Wednesday. And then I loaded up the last of my Wolf 200 grains semi-wad cutters, or no, the 230 grains. And I like the Wolf bullets. They're really, really nice. They're made by Barry now, so I've been really impressed with what I've gotten from Wolf lately. What about you, Mike? What you do with guns?
Various things. Sarah and I and daughter, we went to the gunsmith to get the two bullets out of my revolver. Pretty much showed up, gave him the revolver. Sarah had called ahead of time, so we knew that we were coming. And the guy went to the back, banged a few times, came back, here you go. No charge.
So you gave the revolver to the pretty girl to give to the gunsmith, right?
Well, yeah. I want the premium treatment, so I got the pretty faces to give it to him. Yep. I emailed NEA about my handguard that I broke, and pretty much they emailed me back and said that it looked like I had over-torqued the two screws, which caused the aluminum block to bind and crack. And pretty much they're sorry, but it's not covered under their warranty. So it looks like I'm going to be in the market for a new handguard.
Well, that sucks.
So I was just... Yeah. So I just started browsing the CGN-EE just to see if I could find, you know, someone who bought an AR. And first thing they did was replace the handguard, so I figured, oh, someone's probably selling one for $10 that they don't want, something that I can just throw on there just to replace it. But I did kind of play with it a little bit, and I didn't loosen the screws at all, but I think at this point in time, it's torqued on so tight that it's going to stay where it is for now.
Now, did you actually torque it down at all, or did it come that way when you bought it? Did you apply any pressure to the screws?
Well, yeah, because a few weeks ago, the whole handguard came right off.
Okay.
When I was shooting it. So I put it back on and I went to tighten it up. And I didn't think I was tightening it up that tight, but I guess I was. I guess my fingers are stronger than I thought. I don't know. But it cracked. So whatever. It is what it is.
It happens. I've done that. Yep. I cracked the receiver in my Remington 597 while we're stripping the over torquing the screws.
Yeah. Yeah. On Friday, Sarah and I went shooting. I tested the GP100 and it's still grouping all right. You know, same grouping it was on the makeshift rest that I have for it. So it was kind of a vertical string of it, but they're all pretty decent.
You are so lucky. So lucky.
Yeah. It looks like there's no damage to it at all. And then I ran Sarah through a classifier because she has to do a classifier next weekend. We're getting ready. We're going down to Florida for the state championship. And Sarah needs to get classified for that, so she's never done one. So we kind of ran through one with her just to give her a taste of it. Then over the weekend, went and visited family Thanksgiving. So we stopped down at Firearms Outlet. Because Sarah and I were talking about, well, if we're going all the way down to Florida for a match, we figured we should have a backup gun just in case one of our guns breaks. So we were kind of looking at the M&P Pro Core. And I suggested going with the Core versus just the regular Pro. Only so one day, if we ever wanted to, we could throw a red dot on top of that. And then Sarah got looking around, and then she got looking at the Canuck 1911 and 9mm. So I think that's kind of creeping into her mind as a potential to switch classes from stock service pistol into enhanced service pistol.
What did she think of it?
She really liked it. She liked the weight. She liked the grip. She felt it felt very comfortable in her hand. She liked the trigger on it. So I think she just kind of has to. It was kind of at a left field idea when I saw it there, and I thought, oh, why don't you try handling that? So she kind of has to think it over and see what she thinks about the whole idea of it. So we'll figure it out. She really wants to try shooting one first, of course, before she buys it. But we'll see if we can find someone that has one. And then, what were you going to say?
I was going to say the 9mm is a nice shooting round in a 1911. It's very light shooting.
Yeah, and I think that's what Sarah would like about it. And then today we went shooting again. We did a whole pile of practice for Sarah for her classifier, just running through a bunch of drills, up close shooting, trying to, you know, work on the double taps and work on the, you know, seeing her sights every time and getting that good trigger pull. She's doing good. At the end, I tried putting different sights on my GP100. When I got it secondhand, the guy had put aftermarket fiber optics on it, and I realized that if I actually put the whole fiber optic circle in the back U part, that it would actually be above, like where it should be. Like it wouldn't be like the actual sight wouldn't be level with the rear sight. So I was kind of wondering if that was causing me to shoot high, because I always thought the revolver shot high. So I put the stock one in, which is just a plain black, and I shot it with that. And nope, pretty much it was the same thing. It still shot just a little high at 15 yards. But in the process, I got two more squibs.
Oh, no.
And
you didn't.
Both of them, I caught them both, but both of them just barely got, like, they just went in, like, just past the forcing cone. Like, you could see the back of them.
So you have checked your press since then, have you not?
Well, I went back and I checked I write down when I load and how much I loaded, stuff like that. And I realized that I'm in the last batch of stuff that I had loaded when I went to Manitoba. And I realized this stuff I had actually loaded. I had been up for about 24 hours when I had loaded it. So I'm thinking that I was tired and in a rush trying to load all this ammo before I went off to Manitoba. And that was the problem. I must have somehow skipped a couple of them.
How many did you make up?
So I think the batch said it was about 425. I've shot over 200 of them with no problem, and I have about 200 left.
Okay, what I would do is make one, weigh it, and then weigh every single one that you loaded and see if there's you're missing any powder.
The problem is I think the amount of powder that I'm putting in it is only like, I don't know, I'm ballparking here, 3.7 grains. So, I mean, that's, you know, the variation in weight of the brass, of the primer, or not of the primer, but the brass of the bullet, things like that. You know, that 3.7.
Yeah, that's a light load.
And they're meant to be light loads, right? They're for competition, so. it is what it is. I figure most of the ammunition, like I said, I got through the first 200 no problem. So I figure I'll put the stuff to the side, and it will be my practice stuff, right? Stuff that I don't have to worry about. You know, if I screw something up while I'm practicing, I can stop and get out the squib rod and the hammer and bang it out. I don't have to worry about, you know, losing a match over it or anything like that. So, oh well, time to start cranking on that press again.
Maybe installing a light over your powder dispenser.
I actually bought one, and I just haven't had time to install it yet. So, yep, so that's all I did in guns.
Oh, okay, George?
All right, so that brings us to guns in the news. And usually I, not my favorite section, but this week it is, because the news story came across my Facebook feed. And so here we go. Texas sport employee uses AK-47 to stop four armed robbers. God bless Texas. An employee of a jewelry store in Conroe, Texas, pulled an AK-47 from behind the counter to stop four would-be armed robbers. One of the armed robbers opened fire. Get this. Here's where the story gets even better. Multiple employees returned fire, killing the suspect. So not only do you have a guy pulling an AK out, but then you got other employees returning fire. I love Texas. Jeffrey Turner, Jr., owner of Jeff's Jewelry Store in Conroe, told police that four men entered his store and demanded jewelry, purses, and other items. At least one of the robbers displayed a firearm, according to the Montgomery County Police reporters. Scott Engel, one of Turner's employees, responded by pulling an AK-47 semi-automatic rifle from behind the counter. The gunman fired at the store employees, and a firefight ensued. At least three employees were said to have fired weapons at the robbery suspects. The suspect, who began shooting, was struck and killed in the gunfight. The other three suspects escaped. Someone else just realized this. I just copied and pasted the story, and the story called the AK-47 a semi-automatic rifle. It doesn't call it an assault rifle.
Hmm.
Good reporting.
Yeah, definitely.
I read this. I'm like, it's like straight out of a movie, or it's Texas.
Oh, the best one. Shooting Times used to have a writer named Jerry Castellano, I believe, and he passed away quite a few years ago, and he used to do a dumb crook lineup. And this guy, and I think it was Texas, decided he was going to rob the local gun shop. So first he had to walk past the parked police cruiser that was parked in front of the gun shop. Guy walks into the gun shop, and the two police officers were actually buying stuff, so they're paying it the cash. Guy pulls out his gun, fires a couple rounds in the ceiling, and said, "This is a robbery." Well, they couldn't determine the cause of death because he had 47 rounds in him. Everybody, including the police officer, shot him. The entire store. And they just closed the case, said, "Oh, well, we can't figure out who did it," so they didn't even pursue anything. But who would walk into a gun store with two cops at the cash register and fire a round in the ceiling? You know, your gun's already pointed up in the air. You're a perfect target. Everybody opened up on him.
There's actually been a couple gun store robberies here in Calgary. I mean, nothing too recent, but I guess it was earlier this year, the Cabela's that just opened up got broken into, and they stole a bunch of relatively expensive rifles, but it was when the store was closed and, you know, middle of the night, so I guess that's a little different. But one of the ranges in Calgary, too, the Shooting Edge, was broken into a couple times at night as well, and they did have some firearms that were stolen. Security's been upped a hell of a lot since then, but kind of interesting to think about.
Well, the problem is, too, a lot of these stores up here, the clerks can't be armed, and I know of two people personally that were shot and killed in robberies in the gun stores, there's nothing they can do. They can't keep a loaded gun on their persons. They can't have immediate access to information, and the criminals know that, and they're easy targets. So,
And the other thing is, you think anyone is going to try to rob Jeff's jewelry store in Conroe, Texas? Not after the story says that somebody pulls out an AK-47 and other employees return fire. I don't think anyone's going to be robbing that store anytime soon.
Well, not maybe not this month, but you know, sooner or later, a crackhead's going to walk by and try it again.
Any loss of life is tragic.
Yeah.
I have a hard time finding sympathy for people like the gunman that lost his life. When I read that story, I shook my head. I thought, only in Texas. Story number two, tell me.
Story number two is this year's 2016 European Handgun Championship took place in Hungary last week. This multi-day shoot ran from October 3rd to the 8th. This level 4 IPSC match attracted over 1,000 shooters from around the world. Apparently, the AHC's poor range design became very evident once it started to rain. Shooting bays became flooded, courses of fire were ankle deep in mud, emergency drain channels had to be dug, things went from bad to worse very quickly. From the videos we saw on YouTube, the range lacked any proper drainage system. There was no gravel beds in the courses of fires or the pathways. Just one big muddy mess with many people slipping and falling. Apparently, CZ was a little more upset with the EHC. We're not sure what else may have prompted such a strong response from CZ, but they, I found this letter, if I can open it up here, on Facebook, and it's from the... Can you open that for me, Mike? I can't open this stupid thing. Oh, there we go. This is from the CZ Shooting Team Facebook team, so it's a little long, but it's very interesting. So have a listen to this. This is from Jacob Sundell, who is one of the shooters, and it's addressed to, I would only assume, Aileen is one of the organizers of the event. So he wrote, "To write down these lines brings me no pleasure, but I feel strongly I have to react somehow to the things that have happened in the previous days. Many of us in CZ, our shooters included, have believed that the EHC will be the top competition of the season. It is most important level 4, and we have wanted it from the beginning to make a connection between our brand, company, and this world-class event. My main aim in this case was to support the sport, celebrate IPSC, and the competition in general, with respect to all the benefits shooters involved, no matter if they're our customers or not. They are the soul of our sport. People who take a few days off and travel to Edgar, expecting a wonderful sport and shooting experience. Real fans investing their own precious time and money. They have chosen implicitly to come here instead of doing anything else, and there was over 1,000 of them. I will not go through all the problems and difficulties we were facing during the match. I have to admit there is no need to outline them. That is up to you guys to evaluate in detail, but I sense strong negative feelings in the shooting community, and I have to say that I consider most of these feelings perfectly justified. Of course, it was a combination of factors that led to this mess. Some of them were out of the control of man, but some were definitely due to the lack of organization and bad decisions. I think it makes no sense, and it will be just time-consuming to look for one person to blame. The whole system basically failed. I believe it is in the IPSC leadership that should act now and come with some outcome. Maybe it's also time to admit that not each and every match has to be profitable in case it doesn't fulfill the expectations. I leave you to reconsider the idea of partially returning the entrance fees of the participants. Please consider if making this step will help reestablish the damage and trust that would be viewed as a fair gesture." But then they add, "As far as sponsorship money, I have to act in the best interest of the CZ in this case and demand a full refund after the competition. We are sorry that our name was connected with this event and bounded by so many, many negative feelings." Wow. When I read this, my jaw dropped. I've never heard of a sponsor backing out of a major match and asking for a refund, never mind suggesting that the participants ask for a refund. So it must have been one heck of a mess over there in Hungary.
Well, they certainly didn't mince words.
No. It makes you wonder whether if something something must have provoked an attitude like this. Like they got rebuffed by the organizers. Who knows? But those are pretty strong words.
All right, story three. Students put down books and learn to hunt for full credits. This is by Bryce Hoy from, surprisingly, CBC News. Students in the University of Manitoba's Department of Environment and Geography are learning how to hunt in exchange for school credit this fall. The Environmental Field Investigations course gives students hands-on experience hunting and harvesting geese and deer in southern Manitoba, as well as university credits. Professor Rick Badak said it's important for students in the Faculty of Environment, Earth, and Resources to get a well-rounded understanding of these issues they study, and that includes the role hunters play in conservation. We learn much more, I think, when we take students into the field than in a traditional university classroom, he said. Hunting is one of the tools that wildlife managers use in their arsenal as we try to manage and maintain and preserve wildlife populations. So hunting is something I feel, and many of my colleagues feel, students need to be aware of and understand and take part in to experience exactly what hunters and people who are in the hunting community are all about. That was abbreviated, but I just thought that was a great idea. I could never have imagined a university suggesting to students that they go out and learn how to hunt.
I wonder if any of the U.S. schools offer that type of program.
Possibly, but I definitely wouldn't imagine that. I can't imagine my college doing something like that when I was in school.
Well, they should.
Yep.
Yep. And you even get credits, too, which is awesome.
Well, it helps with motivation, right? People who might have been on the fence about hunting, well, hey, if I get to get a credit for this and, you know, not have to take class, even if nothing else, I don't have to go to class, right?
I think that just the fact that it's assisting so much with, like, conservation education is huge. I'll give you guys an example. I guess from my personal life, I recently I went on a date with this girl who was in the bioscience field at U of C. She was studying to become a vet, and I asked her what she knew about hunting, or she asked me what I did, and I told her, you know, I'm an avid hunter, that sort of thing, and I'm also a conservationist. And she just couldn't put two and two together and figure out how I could be a hunter and a conservationist at the same time. And, you know, that's for somebody who's going into a field that literally revolves around animals, you should really be educated on how, you know, conservation and hunting are so closely tied together. So that needs to change.
As a bioscience major, actually, they do talk about it a little bit in our ecology class. It was mostly just kind of mentioned in passing, but they do mention how sometimes hunting is used to help control certain populations and stuff. So might have just not taken that class yet. But
oh, well, she went to Mount Royal, so it makes sense.
Well, the one thing that we actually edited out of it, because this was quite long, there was a young lady taking the course who was a vegan, and it taught her to appreciate the actual life cycle of the animal and harvesting. So she's actually, she got her license and she went out and she harvested an animal and she processed it and everything else. So, you know, at least it's appreciated for the value that it does provide.
I've actually met a couple of vegetarians who, you know, at first you say, oh, I want to get into hunting or whatever, and to kind of have that startled look on their face. But once they actually think it through, most of the complaints for vegetarians are they don't like the way that animals are processed, and if you're going out and hunting, that animal's lived its life the way it's supposed to. It's killed, you know, humanely, and so there, a lot of them are actually more okay with it.
It's true, it is, because if you've ever been to a meat processing plant or any place they raise domestic animals, it's not nice. The animal lives its whole life.
Yeah, there's
it has a perfectly good diet and doesn't even know what's happening. It's just one day it's over.
Yeah, which, I mean, would happen anyways.
Exactly.
All right, well, this brings us to our interview and our main topic. So I'm going to pass the show off to Thomas, and he will take us through the interview and the main topic. Thomas, take it away.
Hold on. I thought you were the lead host. The lead host is supposed to give you. Okay, so we've got Rachel and we've got Delano back from UFC. We had them last year when the association was just in the infancy last year. I think when we last spoke. And
No. We were 2 years old when we last spoke, so we've just aged a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you like me to take over the interview, Sir Thomas?
I need more coffee. Actually, I didn't have any coffee tonight. That probably helps. So how's it grown since last year?
So I'll read off some statistics that we've we recorded at our last annual general meeting. Just some stuff with regards to membership and finance growth. But this is from May, so it's not 100% up to date, but I'll touch on that in a little while. So start off finances-wise, it's for a university club, it's kind of important to, you know, have finances and actually procure finances because we don't get any sponsorship from the university or anything. But revenue was up over 200% last year, which is pretty significant. Our membership increased 44% from the previous year. It actually ended up being around 60% at the 1 year mark. Like, we go by academic years, so May 1st to May 1st. This was in March that these statistics were created. So it actually ended up being about a 60% growth rate from the previous year. Averaging about 2.3, 2.5 events per month, ranging from, you know, basic target shooting to long distance shooting to competition shooting, shotgun sports, that sort of thing. we also held 5 events in October, which was our record for the year for most of them. We held a trap tournament as well last year. That was our biggest event with around 30 people participating. This year, we've already held about 15 or 16 events so far, even though the academic year is only a couple months old. we held five events alone in September. We've already held 2 in October, so we've gotten off to a very strong start. From this point last year, this exact day last year, we are about 51% larger than we were. So things are looking very good for this year, and I'm incredibly excited. We expanded our executive team this year as well, taking on some new people from some of the other universities in the city, actually, some graphics designers and programmers as well, just to assist us with the creation of our new website. So that's fantastic. It's up and running. We got that up and running first week of school. And it's absolutely stunning, and I'm incredibly impressed, and I think everybody else is too. we've been doing some fundraising as of late, usually partnering up with other organizations to host giveaways and that sort of thing. We've been able to procure a couple more sponsors as well, whether it be prizes for our events or even financial help or discounts at local businesses. We've been able to procure a couple more of those. Now that we're a little older and a little, I guess, wiser, we have a little bit more pull in the shooting community in Calgary. So people recognize us as a legitimate organization and are willing to help us with whatever we need, more or less.
Can I ask you a question?
And, oh, yeah, of course.
Is it the Alberta Hunting Association? Are they still giving you the discounts on the hunter safety courses?
So they're Alberta Hunters Education Instructors Association, or AHEA, and they help us out at many different aspects of firearms. So one of them, yes, being the hunting licenses. There's also the firearms licenses, and they also run a facility very close to Calgary where you're able to participate in shotgun sports. So they have no problem providing us discounted rates and that sort of thing there. So lots of shooting at very discounted rates for our members.
Is it still just asking for a donation?
Yes, that's the way that the courses are done. It's by donation, since Alberta Hunters Education Instructors Association is a charity. The cost of all courses is by donation. So you end up getting a nice juicy bit of that back in your tax return.
Oh, yeah. Even if you make a healthy donation, it's still going to be half the price of the course.
Exactly.
Excellent.
So typically, like, we ask our members to donate a minimum of $50. that covers, or $45 actually, that covers the complete cost of the course on IHEA's end, so they're not losing at all. And of course, they're fine with giving us that discount as well, so it's not a problem.
Not
and if our members don't pay that fee, then the University of Calgary Firearms Association will pay it, just to make sure that IHEA breaks even.
Now, does that include the test as well for the PAL?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah, both practical and written test.
So if they ask for 50, give them 100.
Exactly. Give them more than 100. They're a great organization.
Excellent. Yeah, I remember you talking about that last year, and I thought that was an excellent program. Because, you know, some people are struggling students. They don't have a lot of money. So for those people, it's perfect. For people who can afford a little bit more, give a little bit more.
Exactly. And the majority of our members are, you know, poor, struggling students. So, you know, we try to subsidize as much as possible. And I guess people don't realize that, like, once they actually get into the firearms hobby, like, feeding your firearm is a whole nother ball game, and it's going to cost you a ton of cash. But I guess that's what, you know, graduation is for.
you've been doing a lot of work with the Calgary Shooting Center. Can you tell me a little bit about their support and their sponsorship? Because they do a lot for you guys.
Rachel, go ahead.
Yeah, so Calgary Shooting Center, that's where a lot of our events are held, simply because, we are in Canada. It gets pretty cold in the wintertime, and a lot of the university students don't necessarily know how to layer up well to do outdoor events.
No, I've noticed
so,
that.
Yeah. The Calgary Shooting Center is really nice to use for events because we can use it all year round. So they give us discounted entry rates, so we are able to charge our members discounted entry rates as well, so they don't have to pay quite as much. Because as you said, when you're a student, you know, every little bit counts. They've also let us use a couple rental firearms with no rental fee charges, and they're just really good for helping us out with stuff like that. They're very flexible for whenever we need to set up an event. They're usually able to do that. And we've also recently been doing a few cinema range shoots down there as well, which is a lot of fun. It's very unique. It's not something we can do somewhere else, so being able to do that at their facility, it's a real perk for our members, something that most of them can't really do on their own, because if they were to go on their own, it's really expensive.
Oh, I'll add a couple points to that as well. Just from way back before Rachel was part of the organization, when we first went and met with Calgary Shooting Center, they told us that for this relationship to work, like, they're more than happy to help us out in whatever way we needed. But we just needed to, like, prove to them that we weren't just a bunch of kids who were going to come and mess around every second Thursday or something like that. And over the years, we've really proved that to them. And when a lot of the time when we're there, people just think that we're staff because we're there so much. And most of the time, we can't answer their questions, too. So it's pretty funny. But we've kind of gone full circle in the sense that when they have their large promotional days, such as Glock days or SIG days, they'll actually come and ask our members to volunteer as range officers in order to supervise folks on the actual range while their actual staff are selling the firearms. So we're always happy to volunteer for anybody who supports us. And even, you know, people who just like what we do, we're always happy to volunteer. And Calgary Shooting Center has definitely recognized that, and they utilize us for a handful of their events, and they're more than willing to help us out with anything, including, you know, donations, prizes, that sort of thing. So it's a really good relationship we have with them.
Well, as Trevor would say, if you don't shoot at the shop at the Calgary Shooting Center, you're a communist, right? So, Rachel, have you noticed a great increase in number of women shooters coming out to your events?
I'd say it's been going up steadily. We haven't seen, you know, huge peaks in them, but we've been steadily hitting between about 30 to 35% of our membership is women.
That's still healthy.
Yeah, and we do try and offer the occasional events too to incentivize more women to sign up. We've run a women's only shoot before at the Calgary Shooting Center, and we'll be having another one coming up probably fairly soon this year as well, to try and encourage a few more to come out and try it. Yeah, it's really nice to see women getting out and doing it as well. Sometimes they're actually our most eager ones to keep shooting, actually.
They make better students, too. they listen better, they take instruction better, and they shoot overall, and they shoot better.
Some of them, yeah.
Oh, I know some girls that have some absolutely amazing shots. They're just amazing. Okay, so you did a radio interview late recently. Now, was that for the university or was that outside the university?
So that was for the campus radio station.
Okay, and how did that go?
Pretty well. It was really nice to see them actually inviting out some of the clubs. You know, overall, the university tends to be a more liberal environment, so it's really nice to see them getting out clubs like ours and having a nice broad basis for who they're bringing on the show. I thought it went pretty well. It seemed to go pretty well on my end.
They didn't try to throw you under the bus at all or do anything really negative to the sport?
Nope. He was pretty willing to just ask some questions and let me answer them and wasn't trying to trap me into questions or anything.
Oh, excellent. So must have made it comfortable then.
Yeah.
Now, have you had any negative press release at all? Like any stuff come back at the association?
Not that I know of. I don't believe we've had any. Have we, Delano?
At this point in time, like, we've been around for 3 years now, which for a university club is enough to give you some tenure. So people kind of know just to mind their own business, because when you're dealing with a community like firearms, everybody who's part of the organization will have a strong opinion against anything negative about the sport. So when you bring a negative point up to somebody in the club, it's not just that individual's opinion that you're going to hear. It's most likely going to be everybody's opinion that you're going to
hear. This is true.
And that's what makes the firearm community so great, is our ability to band together and stand up for things that we believe in. And I really think that we are, you know, a force to be reckoned with on campus, for lack of better terms. We're not aggressive, but we still stand up for what we believe in. And I think that that's a really big part of university, is having that outlet where you can go be yourself, talk about your hobbies, talk about, you know, what you like to do with a group of like-minded people. And, you know, we were actually in an article in the Calgary Herald, our local newspaper, the other day, and it's kind of comical, but they refer to us as a safe space for firearms owners. and that, to be honest, that is what we are. We are a safe space where you can come and talk about firearms and not have any negative judgment. So, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to skip the next question. What's the most popular guns for the new shooters? Like, once somebody joins the association, they get their license, and they decide they want to make that big decision to get their very first firearm, whether it's a rifle or a pistol, which tends to be the most popular firearm?
So I'm not so much sure about what they're going out and buying, because we tend to not get quite as much feedback on that. But for what we typically have out at our events, some of our most popular ones tend to be, we've got a Ruger 10/22 on it with a nice scope on it. That one tends to be really popular. It's a nice one for people who just came in to pick up and shoot. You know, it's got no recoil. It's a 22. So it's really nice to get people a little bit more comfortable with their stance and everything. And then for our other one, probably our most popular is our AR-15 that's chambered in 223. I'd say that's, or not 223, our 7.62x39 is probably our most popular one, is that AR, because we provide that caliber for free to our members, so they get to come out and shoot an AR-15 and not have to pay extra for ammunition or anything.
Well, also, I remember they also had, he had a Nork that he was using as a rental gun, and he had over 10,000 rounds through that gun, and it was still going strong. Because
The AR that we have is, it's a Northeastern Arms AR-15. We have a couple of them, actually, one in 223 and one in 7.62x39. And they certainly take a beating, but we've had a couple issues with them, but Northeastern Arms is really good about fixing them, and they get us the parts that we need really quickly, so it's never been an issue.
Unless you over-torque a screw, right, Mike?
Apparently.
Well, yeah, our biggest thing with the AR-15s is, especially for our cinema range shoots, that tends to be the one that everybody's wanting to shoot at those, and it's a very fast-paced event, so we're putting quite a few rounds through it very quickly, so it's taken a little bit more abuse, I guess you could say.
Now, can the members bring their own firearms to the events?
Yep, if they're licensed, they can bring their own firearms. We typically have one bay set aside for people who have brought their own stuff so that they can just do their own thing in that bay. And often they actually are quite good about letting other members come up and try it as well, which is really nice because it gives us a little bit more variety than what we usually have. And sometimes we get really cool ones in that people are really eager to show other people how to shoot, and those are a lot of fun.
Well, it's kind of hard not to. You have somebody come up and they're looking at your gun and they're really excited, and you can't help but say, do you want to try it?
Exactly.
That's the thing I like when I first got into shooting, is that everybody was letting me, you know, you'd look at the different guns and then people say, sure, you want to try it? No, it's okay. No. But everybody lets you, unless, you know, it's a really expensive collector's item. Most people will offer to let you try their guns.
Yeah, we've definitely noticed that a lot of people are really good about that. I mean, unless it's something that's super expensive to shoot, of course. If it's expensive rounds, you tend to not see quite as much. But even then, we've got people who are like, yeah, do you want to do one round or something of this? And so it's really nice to see people getting others trying theirs as well.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be too friendly in my ammo if I was reloading a 50 Action Express. That would get a little expensive to start giving away shots. So you mentioned that you've got another ladies' night planned out. Do you have any other future goals or plan for the organization?
Well, so I've been around, so I'm the only remaining member of the founding executive team. So this is my last year with the organization. So one of my major goals is ensuring that we have the proper assets to function properly as an organization next year. So it means coming up with a contingency plan and having individuals that are going to be stepping into leadership roles. So that's a big one, is actually setting up the club so that we'll actually be able to operate well in the next year.
Definitely.
Other than that, Rachel, you can talk about the long distance shooting. I know that's something that we're getting into. If you'd like to talk about that.
Sure. So we ran our first kind of trial run of our long distance shooting events on September 25th. And so we're going to be changing up a couple things that we noticed in the first one, and hopefully we'll be running a few more of those. We're really hoping to have one more this year before it gets too cold, but we'll see. We've already got one cold snap, so if the weather doesn't warm up a little bit, we might have to wait until it warms up in the spring, but we want to have a few of those out for sure next summer. I'd like to be running quite a few of them. We've got some equipment that was donated to the club, actually, for our long-distance shoots. We bought a couple of, I believe it's the Drummond. Is that correct, Delano?
Yeah, that's correct, Drummond. They're from they're from Victoria, or no, not Victoria, but somewhere in BC.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of their gongs donated. So we've got 5 gongs now that we set up out on Crown Land. We've been doing it up to 400 meters. So one at 200, 300, and 400, just to get people out learning how to shoot a little bit further. We don't really have the facilities to go any farther than that, and because this one will be open to new shooters once we've got it running smoothly, we're going to stick with about that range so people are having some success with it. And we actually, for our first one, we had one of our executives bought a 50 caliber, and so we were able to try that out that day as well. So that got quite a bit of excitement. Our 400-meter gong is an AR-550, so we're able to use that one for the 50 caliber. Oh, so that's a lot of fun.
That's a nice dinging sound that would make.
Yes, it does.
I'll also touch on a couple more of my plans. Ever since I took over in March, I've been trying to steer the club in more of a conservation, I guess, more of a path of conservation. I'm a big advocate for hunting and conservation, and I really want to be able to pass on those hobbies to our members. So I mentioned before, I had already taken a group of people out, or a couple groups of people out hunting, probably 6 or 7 first-time hunters out for ducks, and, you know, they're hooked and they've gone on their own and that sort of thing.
So I'm really pushing the whole conservation side of things, and that includes building relationships with local conservation organizations and making sure that they're aware that they can utilize us for volunteers. I like to tell people, you know, we're students, we're expendable, because we really are. So there's that whole aspect of things.
What organizations have you aligned with?
We've worked with a hell of a lot of organizations, actually. Volunteered for Delta Waterfowl, Pheasants Forever, IHEA, so Alberta Hunters Education Instructors Association, Ducks Unlimited, Safari Club International, more or less all of the major conservation organizations in Calgary. There's still a couple that we have to reach out to, and it's a work in progress, but that'll come with some time. Additionally, of course, volunteering for some of the local ranges as well for their three gun matches, as well as some youth programs and women's programs, that sort of thing. So another big thing that I'm focusing on is getting our websites a lot more user-friendly and making a hell of a lot more improvements on the side of firearm sales. So you guys are probably aware, like on Facebook, there used to be huge gun groups where people could actually sell firearms and buy firearms. Now it's a big hit, and there were thousands of people in each of these groups. And just recently, they changed the regulations on Facebook not to allow those anymore. Well, my plan for the future is to get somewhat of a buy and sell section up on our website, where not only members, but the general public will be able to post their firearms that they're looking to buy and sell. And of course, that's going to generate traffic on our website and generate more exposure for the organization. And at the same time, it's going to give the general public an outlet that they're actually able to sell their firearms on, which is huge. So
okay, I just have one last question for you, go on to Mike's main topic tonight. And you're all both invited to join us for the main topic too. What about liability? Because your association is shooting under the range, so are you affiliated with one of the advocacy groups for your insurance for the group, or how does that work, insurance-wise, for the shooters?
So the way that works is we're covered under the Students' Union at the University of Calgary. So the Students' Union is a not-for-profit that obviously has their own insurance, and we pay somewhat of a fee every year that just allows us to be covered under their insurance as well. I forgot the exact value, but it's something substantial, and like it's the liability insurance or whatever. So I know we're covered under that. And then additionally, whenever we do go to the range, we always have to sign their waivers as well and that sort of thing. So we are covered by that too.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, so tonight's main topic is all yours tonight.
All right, so I figured with the two of you out on the show tonight, we'd talk about how you try to attract new shooters to the sport and convince people who, you know, might be iffy on coming out to shoot. So do you have I just kind of like imagine trying to remember my college days. Like, you know, every once a year you have, like, the auditorium and there's people, you guys would set up a table in there and every club sets up a table and you try and get people to join up and check out your club, something like that. Do you guys have something like that?
Yes, we do. We have that three times a year. Once each semester for the clubs week where, like you're saying, all the clubs go and they try and get as many members as they can and talk about who they are. And then the third time is during orientation week. So all the first years just kind of get to walk around and look at what's at the university. And, yeah, we advertise the organization that day as well.
Okay. So how do you try to approach, essentially random people and convince them to try to go shooting?
Well, I'd say that we all have different methods of doing it. I'll start with mine, and then we can move on to Rachel's as well. But what I usually do is I just say, who wants to go shoot some guns? And, of course, all the heads turn because you can't talk about guns on a campus, right? And then I make sure to specify, not today, but later on. And that always brings in the laughs and smiles and that sort of thing. And
well, that'll attract attention on campus.
Well, exactly. It does attract a hell of a lot of attention. And then from there, it's just about advertising to them that I tell them everything that we do, everything that we offer. Make sure that they're aware that there's no license required, no firearms required, no experience required is the big one. And I like to tell them that even if this is something that you just want to try once, if you do it through us, it's going to be significantly cheaper than if you go out and do it on their own. And, of course, student here is cheap, and they're down. So that's usually how it goes. Rachel, what about you?
So for the most part, I don't tend to use Delano's line of want to come shoot some guns.
Just a little more tact.
Yeah. but I do often bring up the point of, have you ever wanted to try it? And even if you only want to try it once, it is cheaper through us. And then I'll usually go into some of the numbers if people seem interested from that point, because I do run most of the indoor events, so I'm pretty familiar with all the costs for our different things and how much cheaper it is than just going on their own. So I usually bring that up. This Clubs Week, or Clubs Expo, I guess, we had a little bit of a different tactic as well. I brought my dog out because it was all outside, and so he served us some pretty good bait to get people actually pausing by the booth, and then they overhear part of the spiel, and you could get new people kind of listening in, and you could start over for them as well.
Well, a pretty just dog attracts a pretty dog attracts everybody, men and women. Everybody wants to pat the dog.
Too bad we can't bring him out for Clubs Week too. But I do tend to go more for the numbers side of things and explaining how it is cheaper. Just because, yeah, everybody says it's cheaper, but if you actually show people, that can make a bit of a difference as well. And we've got a bunch of our promotion materials now as well with our graphic designers. And so it's great. We've got a bunch of different photos of our different events anytime we have up a booth like that. So I'm able to point out different photos and explain like the wide range of events that we can do. And then how, if you do enjoy it, you can also even move on to licensing through our club as well, because we offer that through for discounted rates as well. So that tends to get most people pretty interested.
That's good. What about trying to convince people you know, like maybe a coworker or something like that, who haven't come out shooting, but you know you're trying to talk them into coming out sometime? Do you guys ever have any strategies for how you talk someone into it?
Honestly, I take so many people shooting that I don't usually approach anybody anymore. I just wait until they approach me.
That's true. It's true.
Fair enough, yeah.
But I guess for anybody that's never done it before, I usually try and tell them like a sob story about like way back in the day how I first got into hunting and how it was like a bonding experience with my dad or whatever, that sort of thing. And then after they've heard that, they're like, wow, that sounds like something I could get into. And I'll be like, listen, like, I'll take you out for free or whatever. Or I just tell them to join the club. I don't take people out on my own. I'm just like, join my organization and we'll take care of you, right?
All right.
One nice thing I like to talk about, if I'm just talking about it with people who've never been around firearms, I find traps a really nice one to mention. It's not what people think of when they think about going out and shooting. And, I mean, it's so much fun. You get to go and blow up a clay disc with a shotgun. It's pretty awesome. So it sounds really interesting, and it gets people kind of listening in on what you're saying about it. And, I mean, it doesn't, anybody who's against hunting or anything like that, it's clear that that's not what you're doing with traps. So some of them, it's a little bit more neutral ground, and it's just something fun to talk about that generally you get a better reaction with, I find. That's a nice one to kind of ease into things.
Well, and you get instant feedback when you're shooting, like whether you hit or miss, you know instantly.
And you know how well you hit it as well, which is nice.
Which is something I don't do well.
Thomas, do you have any strategies?
I tend to take a lot of coworkers shooting, because my job, I meet so many different people each day. And I usually have like a pro gun shirt or pro gun hat on, and or they ask you what you're doing for the weekend, and all I ever do is shoot. So I say, well, I'm going shooting this weekend. And I've probably taken at least, I thought about it this afternoon, probably at least 30 of my coworkers shooting over the years. And I find it's the women that tend to be more excited about doing it. This year alone, I've probably taken at least 10 girls out shooting. All bus drivers, they just wanted to try it.
Okay.
You just tell them how much fun it is and how it's like the incredible focus and attention that you have to you know, and you dispel some of the myths and put something, tell me you put something light in your hand, no recoil, and most of them are repeat. Most people I've taken shooting want to go back a second time, or they want to get their license, which is good.
Oh, yeah. Yep. George, you have a strategy?
Yeah, I just ask people if they want to come shooting, and they either say yes or no. I'm always talking. Well, not so much now. The job I have now, I never see anybody. I see dispatcher events about it. I'm not on, not on the truck by myself. But in the past, I always talked about shooting, and if I was going shooting on a weekend, or so anyone I ever came in contact were more than well aware of my shooting. And that, so I had no problems with it. If you want to come, let me know, we'll go out and go shooting, and some people took me up on it, some people didn't.
Yeah. Well, it's always been a lot of times my strategy is I just talk about how much fun, you know, how much fun last weekend was when I went shooting, right? And you do it enough times and people start realizing, oh, maybe this is fun and something that they want to try out too.
And I think I got my young girls up. That I've always taken up shooting as well. So, like, when I talk about shooting, I always talk about when they go about shooting. And if a little girl is able to go shooting, it really kind of diffuses any anxiety that an adult might have.
Yeah.
So, I've never really, I can't ever think of anyone coming straight out and opposing shooting.
It took me a long time to get Terry shooting, even though she was really supportive of it, and she grew up with her dad and her brother hunting. I couldn't get my wife shooting until about 15 years ago. And but once I put that .22 pistol in her hand, actually, I think once she fired Bill Little's compensated .45 with a red dot, she was hooked. I mean, absolutely hooked, once she actually tried it. And she ended up attracting a lot of people to the sport, because you don't see a lot of women in wheelchairs pulling up to the firing line pulling out a .45. So she, just by doing what she does, attracts people to the sport, because they figure, well, a girl in a wheelchair can do it, I can do it. So she's actually brought people in too.
That's a very good point about how all-inclusive the shooting sports really are.
Well, it was funny, the minute we joined the club, and Terry was in the wheelchair, within a week they built an accessible shooting position for her. Within a month, they had redesigned the bathroom so she could use the bathroom. And I had extra grab bars, so they installed the grab bars. So they're very accommodating for her.
Okay. So I just wrote down some common things that I've heard back from people as reasons why they don't want to go shooting. I just thought we could go over them and some of the comments you give back to convince people to come out. First one was cost, and I know both of you have said that the cost is so much cheaper to shoot through the University of Calgary organization than it is to go out on your own.
Oh, a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I know whenever I take people shooting, I always tell them that it's free, and I'll pay for all their ammunition and stuff like that.
That depends who it is. You know, if I'm taking a younger person, a kid, yeah, I'm paying for the ammo. And, you know, a little kid, I'll pay the $10 gas fee for a little kid. But, you know, if you're in your 40s or 50s, you pay your gas fee and you reimburse me for the ammo.
No, I've always paid the whole way through for people. And, I mean, I have some people who will, you know, they'll, oh, here's $20 for the ammo or whatever, you know, that you shot that day. And okay, sure, I'll take your $20 if you're giving it to me. But I never, ever ask someone for money back.
I just tell them to reimburse me for the ammo because I'm cheap. I'm like George. I'll take it your first time, I'll pay for it. You want to go back a second or third time, you're reimbursing me.
Yeah.
Well, okay, first, I'm not cheap. I'm frugal. And I do the same thing.
Yeah, see?
I don't mind printing the bill the first time for the ammo, because you're talking about maybe a box of shells for shotgun. That's about $8-9. I reload my .45, so, you know, 25 cents per round there, and then .22s are dirt cheap, right? So first time out, I don't mind. But if you're going to start coming out 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, then you get your license.
Well, yeah, if you're going that many times.
And it's frugal, Thomas, not cheap.
What about people who have concerns about the noise?
My little daughter, the only reason why she doesn't shoot is it's too loud. I'm not really sure what you can do to combat that, but I know at least one person that's their only reason.
Rachel, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I haven't really heard that concern much. Some people are just, sometimes at events will ask if it's going to be a little loud, because the indoor events can be a little louder. But usually you can just say, oh, you can double up with, like, earplugs and the actual, like, ear protection. And, I mean, really, if you have both, too, it's not that bad. At least I don't find it too bad. So recommending that they can double up gives them another option as well.
The only time it gets really loud is if you're shooting in a small indoor range or if somebody's got a nasty muzzle brake or something.
Yeah. What about people who are concerned with the distance or how long it takes to get to the gun range? I don't know about in Calgary, how close are your ranges for you?
So for Calgary Shooting Center, it's about 20-25 minutes from the university, and we actually offer carpooling for our events, so we offer to pick people up from the university if they don't drive, and that one's also pretty much right on a train line, so it's very easy to get to. Some of the stuff like the BTSA, it's over an hour to get out there, so that's a little bit longer, but generally that's also the people who are really keen on going out to stuff like that, so it doesn't tend to affect those guys quite as much.
Okay. Thomas, have you had that problem?
With me, actually, even trying to find a place to shoot, there's no ranges really close by. So if the closest one to me, I there's a 2-year waiting list to get in. So my biggest complaint is lack of ranges around here.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's kind of, I know I've had complaints from people when I offered them. Because I work almost an hour away from where I live, and I shoot about another half hour in the opposite direction. So when I try and convince someone from work to come shooting, I've had people who literally have said no to, being an hour and a half drive away.
Well, that's it. So I work in Toronto, and the range is in Port Perry, so it's at least a minimum an hour and a half for them to get up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have you figured out a successful way to convince people that it's worth the drive?
Yeah, I buy the coffee.
Oh, okay.
I've had actually a couple people carpool. There was a couple people that wanted to go, and they actually worked in the same division. And I said, well, why don't you guys just drive together? And two of the drivers came up together that way. But it's unfortunate. If they don't want to come to my range or shoot with me, I usually suggest the Target Sports in Gormley in Stouffville, but that's going to cost them well over $100 by the time they leave. So you can spend the money shooting up there, or I'm only going to charge you your $10 and probably cost you $15 to come shooting with me. So
okay.
The club's stomping down on the insurance, so everybody has to be signed up. Everybody has to pay the $10. It's gone up. CSSA put up the guest fees for the clubs, so it's now $10. But for $15, you're going to get 3 or 4 hours of absolute fun.
Yeah. All right. The next couple are kind of more things that when I've approached people, or not random people, but when I've approached people I know, and I, mentioned coming out shooting, these are some of the things that I've heard coming back, and I can only imagine being at the university hearing these coming back at you a lot. Things like guns are just for killing.
Yeah, you get that one occasionally, and usually I judge them in the sense, like, I see what type of sport they play, and, like, if they play hockey, I'm like, hey, have you ever played hockey? And they're like, yes. I'm like, have you ever cross-checked somebody? Yes. And I'm like, I own guns. I've never shot anybody. Like, you kind of have to do the comparison, and people usually don't have anything to say after that. Like, you just tell them that firearms are tools. It's nothing more than a hockey stick or a baseball bat. It just allows you to compete in a specific sport or perform a specific task. Anything is a weapon if you're creative enough, right?
And hockey is far more dangerous statistically than shooting.
Certainly is.
You're more likely to get injured or killed playing hockey than you are to be in a shooting competition.
Yep. And I guess this one's more for you, Rachel. People who say guns are just for, shooting is just for guys.
So I actually tend to hear that one less because I'm the one telling them about it.
Excellent.
Sometimes we do have women who are going, well, I can see you're here, but how many women actually come out to shoots? And we pretty reliably have at least a few women coming out to each of our events. So I just tell them that. Like, we've pretty much always got at least a few women at every event. You're not going to be the only one there. And the whole community, including all of the guys, of course, as well, it's just very welcoming. I mean, even if you are the only one there, you're not going to feel like you are. Everyone's still going to be inviting you up to shoot, and you're still going to have a lot of fun. But that's definitely a misconception. Like, there are women coming out all the time.
Oh, I know. My range, the girls are very active in every level, in competition, in service to the club, everything.
Yep. That's good to hear. What about people who come out and say that they don't want to kill anything or that they're not a hunter?
Well, once again, there's a lot of paths that you can take once you actually do get into firearms. And we've tried to model the club as somewhat of a stepping stone that allows people to get involved with firearms, shoot their first couple rounds off, and then from there, we could easily guide them into the specific discipline that they're interested in participating in. For example, you know, competitive handgun shooting, shotgun sports, hunting, even political activism and that sort of thing as well. So we just make it very clear that we hold a variety of different type of events, but nothing is ever required. You do what you're interested in, and you do what you're comfortable doing. And I was just going to say, providing that freedom and that mindset that this is your choice, you do whatever you want to do, is just huge in the firearms community.
I approach it a little bit differently too, because some people associate hunting with guns. So if somebody, I've actually had people say this, and I just say this to me, and I just say, well, we're just punching holes in paper. That's all we're doing. You're not killing anything. You ever play darts? You have to try to hit that bullseye. It's all you're doing. It's just like playing a game of darts, except you're sending a projectile with gunpowder instead of throwing it. So, you know, you're not killing anything. You're just punching holes through paper. And there's a lot of shooting, and that's what shooting sports is. There's no, well, besides hunting itself, but there's no killing in shooting sports unless you're actually an active hunter. It's all punching holes in paper or hitting clay pigeons. And I try to take the shooting part with guns out of the equation. So, you know, shooting is one thing, hunting is another thing. You can use guns for all kinds of things, not just harvesting animals.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
Go ahead, George.
Our club has a strict policy that you cannot shoot wildlife while on the range. And there's been times we've had turkey come out, ceasefires called, and we all stand there waiting for the stupid turkeys to leave the range. We've had deer come out, again, ceasefires called. Everyone's standing around waiting for the stupid deer to leave the range.
Yeah.
So if anyone were to come to me or reply back to me saying, oh, well, you know, I don't want to kill anything, I'd be like, because you'll get thrown out of the club and banned if you try to kill something on the range.
Oh, yeah. Same. Every club I've been to has been like that. You can't. I've had rabbits and stuff go right in front of me, and I'm shooting. You just go, get out of here. Go.
Yeah. So that's, if anyone were to say anything like that towards me, that's simply how I would reply. And, you know, if you shoot exclusively at an indoor range, well, you're not going to get too much wildlife running across the range.
What about people who use the excuse that guns are dangerous?
They are dangerous. If misused. So,
yeah,
you
make
them feel safe.
Yeah.
You tell them what they're going to go through, how you're going to set them up. Like, you don't actually handle a firearm until you're taught how to use it. You point it downrange and the whole bit. So, you know, you teach them safety so they don't worry about the danger aspect of it.
I just kind of tell them that, you know, I've been shooting for however long, 11, 12 years, and I still have the same amount of orifices than I did when I started shooting. So,
yeah,
He's serious. I've heard him tell people that.
I had a guy discharge a gun in the safe area at the club once, and it missed my head by about a foot. So it can be dangerous if you are not paying attention.
But that goes that kind of goes hand in hand with every other thing ever, like driving, for example. If you're not paying attention while you're driving, I mean, that's obviously dangerous too. Just a matter of perspective, I guess, and just relating it to, I like to relate things as much as possible to other people's hobbies. So I'll use hockey as an example once again, because, you know, a lot of people here play hockey, and you're just, you know, have you ever been injured while playing hockey? And they're like, well, yes, I have. I broke my ankle or something like that. And I say, you know, I've been shooting guns for this long, and I've never come close to hurting myself. And that's the truth. Other than like burning myself on the barrel or something like that, but that doesn't count.
Yeah, I think we've all done that.
Yeah.
Hot brass barrels.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much what I've done. Like you said, Thomas, lots of times I've found that just making sure that they know that we'll go over safety and everything like that before anything gets, you know, handed out, any shots are fired, I find that that tends to make people feel a lot more comfortable when they're doing it. All right, so that's I'm going to skip these last few other ones here. And
we covered this one.
Hold on, Mike.
Okay. Never mind, I've been overruled.
I just want to touch on the guns are illegal. Wanda's got a cousin that we visit in Orno, out Thomas's way. And small little town, so we end up doing a bit of a neighborhood walk later in the evening. And went to this one guy's place, and this guy is a shooter, he's a hunter, and we were talking about, I was telling him how I was holding my AR-15, so this could have been, you know, as far back as 2 years ago when I started it, and he went nuts. He's like, you can't have those. Those are illegal. Those are machine guns. You can't have them. He lost his mind, and I'm like, are you messing with me? Like, seriously, dude, like, I can see your shotgun over there. You own guns. You're a hunter. How can you not know an AR-15 is legal and probably one of the most popular rifles in Canada? But this is a shooter. So I've gotten this argument from a shooter. So I can just imagine that it's got to be out there for regular people that don't know anything about guns.
I find a lot of Canadians think that handguns are illegal in Canada. I've had that conversation with quite a few people.
Yeah, so have I.
Sorry, Rachel, go ahead.
Another one I've heard is not even actually giving a reason, but just the people who say, oh, well, I'm against guns. I don't believe in guns. They don't really give any reason.
Yeah, they have no rationale behind it. They just don't like them.
Yeah. But I've actually seen Delano's got a pretty good method for, you know, dealing with that, and he just asked them, you know, have you ever tried it? How do you know if you haven't tried it? And it really does make some of them pause, like, well, I guess how can I have an opinion on it? I've never tried it. And so he tells them, you know, just go out once and try it and see before you, you know, form a conclusion and be just a little more well-rounded on it before you have an opinion.
That's usually what I do. You know, before you make your decision with no knowledge based upon it, at least try it. And then if you don't like it, you can say, no, I didn't like it. It was too noisy. Like that guy that fired the AR and started crying or with that news article.
PTSD.
and the fact of the matter is, guns are actually illegal in Canada. Unless you have that piece of paper from the government of Canada that says you can have that firearms license and you can own them, firearms are illegal. You can't possess them without that little piece of paper, where they never used to be until 1995.
I actually have one more thing to add to this list here. It's not necessarily a concern, but it more has to do with when you're dealing with new shooters on the range. Running the club and experiencing a new, fresh group of new shooters every week, it's been very, very evident that, like, there's a lot of psychological, What's the wording for it? There's a lot of psychology that goes into actually convincing people to actually enjoy the sport. And one of the big things is actually making sure that the person that you've taken shooting is seeing the correct and appropriate results. Like, for example, when somebody goes to shoot, when they've never done it before, it's very important to give them as much instruction and give them every advantage possible so that they're actually going to hit the clay for the first time. I'll give an example of our trap shooting tournament that we just held on Saturday. I guess there was one individual that didn't read that it was a tournament and showed up without any experience. But he was actually able to hit over 50% of the targets by the end of the event. So I'd say that was pretty positive.
Definitely.
And he won himself a prize, and he was very happy at that. So I just wanted to bring that up because you can see it on the range. If people will get visually frustrated very, very quickly if they're not successful, and it's important to make sure that they have every advantage to make sure that they are going to be successful.
No, that's a good point, because what I do when I take somebody shooting, I score every single target. So once I teach them the basics, I do their 10 shots, and all I'm concerned about is they got 10 shots on paper. If they've got 10 shots on paper on their first target, I'm ecstatic. I praise them like all hell. And then I see how many are in the black, and I take them back, and I give them a little more coaching, a little more technique, and the groups usually shrink considerably. And again, we score that target, and you know they've got more in the black. And as we progress, you know, the more their scores go up, the more I pat them on the back. And by the end, you know, they're extremely happy with what they've done, because they've got something in front of them where they can physically see the progress, they can see the group shrink, they can see the scores going up, and they get that physical feedback after each target. So I find that helps. That tends to make them want to come back and try it again, because they can see the improvement and they want to do it again and get better again.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm going to get a cricket. I'm going to have a cricket recording. Remember, I have these silent moments. I'm just going to hit this cricket play.
But if you had not have interrupted me, I was getting ready to move on to event.
Oh.
So is there anything else anyone would like to add before we move on to event?
Nope.
I'd just like to thank you guys for having us on here before we go to these events. We really appreciate you reaching out and, you know, promoting our club. It's very much appreciated, so thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on, and I'm just grateful to get Rachel, because I promised her last year, and I sort of forgot about her, so. So I'm glad we had a chance to get Rachel back too. And it's been a year, and I'm on your Facebook page, so I see all the events and everything that's happening, and I see a lot of growth. So I just wanted to bring her back on and give our listeners an update and see how well things have been going.
Well, yeah, thank you very much for that. It's very encouraging to see that people are thinking about us.
Well, I also spoke to Sean Humphrey from Ottawa, and we're going to have Sean on in a couple weeks and update his association also.
Oh, that's good. By the sounds of it, they're doing really well as well. They're getting ready for a busy year. I'd like to keep in contact with him as well, and the guys at Durham College as well.
Do they have an association at Durham College?
Oh, yes, they do. Ontario Institute of Technology and Durham College, I guess it's a joint organization there. They're going into their second year. They're having some hiccups with the SU, but by the sounds of it, they're getting over it. So they're doing quite well.
Oh, excellent. Maybe I'll look them up, because they're actually quite close to me then.
Sure. Just let me know. I can get you in contact with their executive if you'd like.
Awesome. Okay. So who's first on events? Mike's doing the...
Yep. So event one, the CCFR calendar. As you might already know, we are going to be creating a CCFR Gunny Girl calendar for 2017. General requirements, they must be a CCFR member and have their PAL. Their firearm they pose with doesn't have to be theirs. We are not looking for tactic Barbies, but classy, relatively fit, tasteful women with firearms. For photo submissions, they don't need to have a firearm necessarily with their pose. We just want to see their general look and attitude, and full body shots, two or three is adequate. Face must be visible. Good lighting is a must. Professional shots can be addressed later. We are hoping to find a selection from across all provinces to fill 12 months. Deadline is October 14th. We may consider late entries with notice. If you or if you know any attractive, fun, gun-loving females who might be interested, then please click on the link. This is from their Facebook page. And ccfrwomen@gmail.com. If you have any questions, please contact Ann Jordan or Kelly Lynn at 780-278-5500 or at the email above. Thanks, everyone. And I'll include the link in the show notes.
Okay, Delano, do you want to read event two?
Sure. So it's Sight and Day at the Port Perry Rod and Gun Club. This is on Saturday, October 15th from 9 until noon. The cost of the event is $30 per shooter with one gun, plus a $5 for each additional gun, and you supply your own ammunition. Port Perry Rod and Gun Club is located on, or is located at 2431 Highway 7A, Port Perry, Ontario, which is about half a kilometer east of Island Road on the north side. It can be difficult to see the range from the road, so keep your eye out for the street number.
Okay, in event two, as actually Dean did an update on his Facebook page, so Select Shooting Supplies is having an industry range day at the Galt Sportsman Club on Saturday, October 15th, between 10 and 4. No PAL required. Please note this is an industry event, not an open range day at Galt. Please, no firearms are permitted except in case ground powers that are going for armor services. And Dean said based on feedback, he's expecting a very good turnout. So what he's done is to ensure that everyone gets to try out the firearms of their choice, he'll be using a ticket system. Tickets will be $5 each or 5 for 20. So basically it's $5 a mag, not a bad idea, a bad fee. And that way you can buy what mag for whatever gun that you want to choose. And I think it's a pretty good deal for the 10mm. Also, each ticket purchase will enter you into the draw for the gift certificate. So the more you shoot, the more your chances. Sales reps from Vortex, Smith & Wesson will be there with various firearms, optics, accessories for you to fondle. Ground Power Distribution, they said, will have their full product line there for you to shoot and Ground Power Services. And what's event four, Mike?
Event four is the Pistol Fundamentals course by Armatura Group in association with the CCFR on Saturday, October 22nd, between 7:45 and 4:30. The cost is a very $15. And the round count is 400 rounds. The course will be held at the Barrie District Hunters and Anglers Conservation Club. And although BDHACC Club is located at 1758 Old 2 South, Midhurst, Ontario, LOL 1X0, Ontario, the course will take place at the quote-unquote back range located at the rear of the property and accessible via a separate entrance. That entrance is located at the intersection of Story Road and Russell Road. There is also have a carbine operator fundamentals course scheduled in Barrie on November 19, 2016. The courses outlined and required equipment that you must bring can be found at www.armaturagroupltd.com.
All right, that brings us to event number five. CDM Academy is having their tactical vehicle operations course. That's going to be on Saturday, October 29th, and continuing through to Sunday, October 30th. And it's going to be Titan Tactical and Combat Inc. Let's see here. This is a must-take course for any armed transport service employee, but is also open to the public. Course cost is $429.99 plus tax. Purchase does not include ammunition. Meals and quarters are provided. It's a pretty thorough course, so visit CDM Academy Facebook link, their Facebook page. Link will be below for a complete course outline and required gear. Event number six, Rachel.
All right, so Lands Shooting Supplies and Silverdale Gun Club are hosting a pumpkin shoot fundraiser for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The shoot will take place on Sunday, October 30th between 10 and 4. And Silverdale is located at 4948 Concession 4 Road, Grimsby, Ontario, postal code L0R1Y0. And you can find their Facebook event at facebook.com/54479739054008.
Or in the
show notes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Pardon me.
That's okay.
That's quite all right.
And they do have some draws coming up, too. They have the Bucket of Booze draw. They've got a draw for one of those 1911s that you're looking at, Mike. And you can win a Ruger AR, too. So George and I are planning to go to both the Lance and the Select Shooting Supplies. So maybe we'll win an AR.
Actually, I may not be able to buy shooting supplies because that's next weekend and we're doing our family Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to go because I already told Dean I was going, so I'll be there. Besides, I want to shoot that. Okay, what else, George?
All right, so listener email.
Yeah, so this is Matt from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns. After shooting a crisp vector in 45 ACP, it is not worth the cost and complex design unless you are getting it in full auto. Even at that, the only thing that is awesome is the two-round burst. If I could get it in full auto, I would buy it just for that. But since we can't, you're better off with a sub-2K, JARD 67 or J68, or any other PPC that you can get. They are cheaper and have less complex design, making it less likely to break. I looked up the JARD 67 and the 68, and I, A, have never seen one in Canada, and B, they look like an early 90s version of what they think the future holds for firearms.
Well, I've seen the Sub 2000, and it's all plastic. I haven't heard good reviews on it. It doesn't seem very sturdy.
No.
I actually own one of the Sub 2000s. I have a Gen 1. And it's a neat little gun. It is predominantly plastic, but that's just a weight thing. Like, they wanted to make this thing as compact and as light as possible, just so you can take it out in the bush and, you know, do whatever you have to do. But I've never had problems with it. It's a princess with regards to the type of ammunition it takes. If you have some of the lower quality 9mm, it will not cycle it well. And I've also had a lot of experiences where the rounds tumble, even at very, very close distances, like 10, 12 yards, the rounds will actually start to tumble. So, yeah, but other than that, it's a pretty good gun. I like it.
Well, they're tumbling. The twist rate's probably off. Are those reloads or factory?
Factory, the Wolf stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah.
Have you had any part failures?
Rachel, what happened to the Kel-Tec at the last event? I don't remember.
I don't know. Someone else is fixing it. I was on that day.
Something happened. I don't remember what it was, but it was an easy fix, and Kel-Tec's really good for getting parts quickly, so.
That's good. Yep. And if you have any other feedback, questions, or comments, you can send them to host@newshootercanada.ca. Our Facebook page, or the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca.
All right, so as of today, we have 226 likes on Facebook.
Excellent.
So if you haven't liked our Facebook page, take one over and give us a like. That brings us to closing comments. I'd just like to, again, thank Delano and Rachel for joining us this week. Always a pleasure, and it was nice meeting you, Rachel.
Thank you for having us on here. It's really nice to be able to come out.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. Such. I didn't give you much notice.
Yeah. Thanks for coming out, and you're really you're supporting, or you're starting in the next generation who appreciate firearms. And that's something that seemed to be dying out in this country. So it's really great to see that it's still alive somewhere.
Especially in our school system.
Yeah.
There's still hope. There is still hope.
I am very encouraged that you mentioned Durham to me, because I'm going to contact them.
Yeah, not a problem.
Yeah.
So, shout outs, George.
All right. Well, that brings us. That brings us to our shout outs, Thomas. I've got none. Thomas, how about you?
I have a shout out to Claire, who is Mr. Claire, is the club secretary treasurer of my club. I had to go up and renew my my membership fee on Wednesday. And because of Terry's health and her lack of shooting the last couple of years, I just said to him, Mom, we're not going to renew Terry this year. She's been in the hospital for the last few months and her license had lapsed. And I told her the whole history. And he just looked at me and said, don't worry about it. He goes, we'll just put her membership on hold for 6 or 7 months. If she's feeling better, come back up. We'll fill the paperwork and we'll get her reinstated. And I just said, thanks, Claire. And he shook his hand. I appreciated it. They didn't have to do that. But because she's a longtime member and she's, he just said, you know, if there's health issues, we're really flexible. Don't worry about it. Don't cancel her membership. Give us some time. So thank you. I appreciate it.
That's first stand up.
Yeah. My shout out this week is to the guy at Firearms Outlet. I don't know what his name was, for being so patient and treating Sarah like an actual shooter. I hate to say it, but we still go to gun shops sometimes and they ask me if I'm looking for anything, and no, I'm not looking for anything. She's the one here, and the guy just will wander off and just assume that Sarah's just being drug around, not that she's the one who's actually there to buy something. So it was really great to have someone who really treated Sarah, you know, with some respect when it came to handling the firearms and everything else.
Yeah, they're really good there. I've shopped there a few times. All the guys are really good.
I've never been there and not bought something, so...
By the way, Fred, I'm still waiting for those clips for my mag holder. I've been waiting 7 months now. Just hint, hint, where's my parts? I ordered them from Firearms Outlet.
Okay.
All right, Rachel, Delana, do you guys have any shout-outs you want to send out to anybody?
It's okay to say no.
I don't think so.
No, actually, I'd like to give a shout out to the rest of the executives from the University of Calgary Farms Association. I made a Facebook post about it today, just kind of from a Thanksgiving point of view. Everybody's been doing real great work, especially since the academic year started, and I'd just like to give a shout out to them and thank them for all their hard work and commitment that they put into this organization. So, thank you for that.
Excellent. All right, so that brings episode 105 to a close. So until next time, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kids shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Yep. See you guys next week.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.